I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, victims of Washington State's failed police pursuit policy are speaking out as signatures are turned in an effort to repeal it.
2 hours after this incident, they had it all cleaned up, boarded up, and we just did this little decoration to try and raise the spirits around here because it's hard.
Plus, Governor Inslee wants more money to remove homeless camps, but gets sassy with a reporter who questions the effectiveness of the program.
I don't know if you care about these people, but we do.
And yet another layer in the case of an activist Seattle public school teacher who inexplicably still has his job. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And man, every day I feel like we're closer to it. 3 for 6 common sense initiatives that are being turned in. I went to an event this morning in Shoreline outside a Dunn Lumber location that will become relevant momentarily, where they turned in 410,000 signatures to send Initiative 2113 to the legislature. It would restore reasonable police pursuits in Washington state. As you know, this is a law that was passed by Democrats in Olympia in the 2021 legislative session. It was their first session after, you know, the summer of 2020 and calls for police reform. And they felt, I think, a lot of pressure to do something and to do something quickly without really considering the consequences of it. And we all know the common sense, right, left, and center know what the consequences have been of the law pushed through by Democrats that dramatically restricted the ability of police to pursue even violent, dangerous criminals. And so, you know, fast forward, I think, this year, those of us who wanted to see a change in that law, we've tried everything. we've really think about it. We've tried everything else except this initiative. There were bipartisan groups of mayors and city council members and county council members begging legislators this past session to do something about it. We, and a lot of you, went on the steps of the Capitol to plead with lawmakers at the last minute, a plea that thankfully they heard, to fix the thing just a little bit. You know, there have been police chiefs and sheriffs who've come out, shared videos, shared stories about what maybe were okay, unintended consequences of restricting police pursuits. So when all of that failed, to get back to a common sense policy with public safety in mind, an initiative, thank God we have that power, an initiative was the next and really last option. And so Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington managed to collect, like I said, more than 410,000 signatures for this initiative. If it's all signed, sealed, delivered by the Secretary of State, it'll go to the legislature in January. They'll decide, hey, do we want to adopt this thing? I wouldn't hold your breath, or else you're going to get a chance to vote on this, which I think you should. You're going to get a chance to vote on this in November of 2024. So at the event in Shoreline, there were a couple people who spoke, and I want to share their stories because Democrats, you know, they make this a property crime issue. That, oh, a lot of these pursuits are just for stolen vehicles because someone's driving a stolen vehicle and that's just a property crime. Well, it's not just a property crime. You're stealing vehicles so you can go and commit other crimes. And when you steal a vehicle, when you drive at high speeds, you have no regard for the lives of the people around you. And that was the case for Maculee Goldig. We've shared this story before. She was 12 years old. She was walking hand in hand down in Pierce County with her best friend home from a sleepover. A guy driving a stolen landscaping truck who had earlier fled from police successfully because they weren't able to pursue him. He hit the two girls, killed Immaculee, left Immaculee's friend grievously injured in a ditch, looking at the body of her friend. So Immaculee's family has become very outspoken about the need to wind back this police pursuit policy. Amber Goldade, her mom, spoke this morning.
They should just be able to walk down the road and just know that they can make it home safely. But that day, my daughter did not. And this just needs to end. The police need to have full pursuit rights. This partial pursuit doesn't work. It still would not have protected my daughter and her best friend.
Yeah, and followed by Amber was Mike Dunn. So it was actually at Dunn Lumber, which is a really deeply rooted Northwest company. And I just broke, my heart broke for him as a business owner. I mean, obviously my heart breaks for Immaculee Goldade's family and losing a child. That's just horrific. But I think when you also look at, you know, when property crime or, oh, it's just stuff is dismissed so easily by Democrats who are so, you know, happy to sacrifice other people's stuff and other people's livelihoods for their policy agenda. So Mike Dunn, the reason why this event for this initiative was held there this morning is they recently had a stolen car come up back into the front of their business, load up with stuff, drive away, ramming a police car on their way out, and they weren't able to be pursued under the law. So here's Mike Dunn talking about, yeah, emotional, the impact it's had on him and his staff.
But I want to talk about the emotional cost to my employees who bust their butts every day to make the store look beautiful, to fill the stock, to keep it clean. 2 hours after this incident, they had it all cleaned up, boarded up, and we just did this little decoration to try and raise the spirits around here because it's hard. And we've been here since 1948. We've been, and before that, down on Lake Union, during the Depression, during the Great Recession, this is a whole other ball game. This is a really hard issue for us.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, every day somebody's backing into their business, but they do have a lot of thefts happening inside their business. People just come in, steal things, go run away, and then, yeah. Now, that's not the only kind of business we've heard of somebody with a stolen vehicle backing in, you know, hooking up to ATMs. We see that all the time at gas stations. So you just hear the emotion in this guy's voice. They've run this business since the 1940s. They've gone through all sorts of things. And he gets emotional talking about how bad public safety has become and how much it's hurting his business and his employees. And again, that's why it bothers me so much when Democrats dismiss the implications of this policy as like non-existent. Because, I mean, Amber's standing right there. Mike's standing right there. Those are just two of many stories of people who've been directly impacted by this law that was passed by the legislature. Quickly, also present at this event was Republican candidate for governor Dave Reichert.
This world is upside down. Right is wrong. Wrong is right. Up is down. Down is up. And then we blame the victims and we excuse the criminals. Where have we come from and how did we get here? We came from a world that was law and order because we allowed the police to do their job. We supported our law enforcement officers. That's why I'm here today.
Yeah, common sense stuff. And, you know, before he was in Congress, he was a sheriff. And certainly things have changed a lot since the days when Dave Reichert was sheriff of King County. So we wanted to, because we've now had two initiatives turned in this week for a total of three. There are three more left. They're still collecting signatures out there for all of these. You can go to letsgowa.com today. Do not wait. Find the closest signing location near you because there is a drop dead deadline at the end of the month for the final three initiatives to be able to qualify. But we wanted to have Brian Haywood, who is the man who has been making all of this happen, come in again just to update you guys on the two initiatives that got turned in this week, one to restore parental rights, the other to restore reasonable police pursuits. Brian Haywood, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
You're my only guest who I'm just always that jazzed to see lately.
I'm not bringing you bad news. I'm bringing you good news. So.
Yeah, so 3 for 6. The police pursue one's near and dear to my heart. I mean, it was so nonsensical, even when it was clear the impact that restricted policy was having on people's lives. They refused to fix it. And so I'm so not a surprise that got enough signatures. So 3 for 6, you still got 3 left. What's your deadline?
December 28th is the last date that we have to, we can turn them in the 29th. We're targeting the 28th.
Are you willing to tell us whether you think you're going to go 6 for 6?
I'm going to do everything in my power to move earth and sky and get all 6 in.
Yeah. So let's start with the beginning of the week. So Tuesday, you guys turn in the initiative on parental rights. Now, it's interesting because it's not the, you know, referendum we tried to run over the summer to reverse a law.
Right.
It's not reversing a law.
That's right.
What is the purpose of it?
So parental rights, really, it's a small pushback against a doctrine that was implemented in Washington law in the 1990s called the mature minor doctrine, which basically said there's things that kids don't need parents' permission for. And that doctrine was introduced, and then there were a series of bills over the last 15, 20 years that have been introduced based on that doctrine that have I believe, intervened in between parent and child in the relationship. And what I want to begin to do is to push back and make the assertion that there is nobody more loving or more caring or more concerned about the welfare of a child than the parents of that child. Yeah. There's no state employee, no government employee, no school. I don't care how much the teacher is involved in the kids' lives. They don't compare to what a parent does. And the law should reflect that. Yeah. And right now, what the law does is it assumes that parents are violent and dangerous and that the exception is the good parent. And so the law should protect the child against the parent. And that to me is a very deadly and sort of insane doctrine, right?
It's offensive.
It really is.
It's offensive.
It is.
Yeah.
Then they don't say it that way, but if you read the law and what it suggests, and when I talk about this, most often when I talk to someone that's leaning left and they're opposed to it or don't understand it, and I say, well, the parents have a right to know. They have a right to know what the curriculum is in the school. They have a right to know if you're giving them medicine in the school. They have a right to know if you're doing mental health counseling because they are going to deal with the child at home. And the response always, and this happened in California. I saw the same thing happen when we lived down there. The response immediately is, well, but parents could be abusive and that might put the child in jeopardy. And that's true. That could happen. And both the current law and this law explicitly call that out and say, if there's a case where the child is in danger, where there's a abuse in the home, this doesn't apply.
But right? Also, there's a law against abuse.
Amen. Yes.
It exists. And
that's the response.
Right.
If that's happening, the child should be not in the home, right? There should be action taken there. Instead of trying to hide something from an abusive parent, get the child into a safe situation should be priority number one, right?
Yeah. Police pursuits. This one's pretty cut and dry. This would restore our police pursuit policies back to the pre-2021 disaster law.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And it essentially says if the police believe that a crime has happened and the public is in jeopardy, they may pursue. But I'd like to add some caveats to this because mm-hmm. I think it's a really important nuance. When people think about police pursuit, they think about 150-mile-an-hour chase down the freeway. And this is not so much targeted to that. There's two things that it does primarily. One is it will restore local decision-making, which should be the case anyway. Kirkland, as school's getting out, the police department there might have a different decision than OMAC at 2 a.m. with a drunk driver, right?
Yes.
And that's the way it should be. There's no way that Olympia can predict and control all the different situations. And there's times when taking the person off the road is more safety conscious than leaving them. And there's sometimes when it might be the opposite. If there's schools are all out, maybe you don't want them chasing them through the streets. But that decision should be a local decision by the chief of police and the dispatch in the local area.
And even Governor Jay Inslee has bragged about us having some of the best training standards for police in the country. Okay. If that's the case, then why aren't you trusting them to use their judgment to decide, is this the best thing to be done in the interest of public safety? That's what really baffles me. You can't have it both ways and say, we have the best trained police officers,
right.
But also we're going to specifically tell you.
But we don't trust them to make any decisions.
Exactly. It makes no sense to me. And you make a really good point that I hadn't thought of, you know, the way that they specifically restricted police pursuits, you know, this scenario.
Right.
You can't, from Olympia, legislate that.
Absolutely
for
not.
All the different scenarios. So this one is great news. I don't think Democrats are going to just pass the initiative, though.
No.
Okay, good.
It tortures them a little bit.
Yes.
There's another piece to this, though, I think is important, and that is that they've said, no, there's no, I don't know what land they live in, but they're claiming that this has had no impact on crime. But when it first went into place, I talked to a retired police officer out of Seattle, and he said within weeks, first of all, the first thing that happened is criminals learned that they could get their girlfriend to go rent a car. That she would then report the car stolen, and then they would use the car to go commit crimes. And that has evolved now to steal a car, get a free getaway car.
Yes.
Right? So it's absolutely, and this is, I think this was unintended. I'll give them at least that much. I don't think they intended it to do this, but it's given free getaway to any criminal. And criminals are not stupid people. They're usually very crafty and very smart, and they figured it out very fast. And hence you get a lot more stolen vehicles. And in fact, the Goldade family, right? That was a stolen vehicle that ran over their daughter. So you have loss of life. You have immense loss of property. And, you know, today we were at Dunn Lumber, and they've had, I was speaking with Mike just on the phone, and he said, this has almost become almost a daily occurrence that someone drives into their storefront and steals. And I said, that shouldn't be the case, right? He sort of almost accepted that it's happening that way. But the vehicle in particular that hit the Shoreline store pulled in with a big high ace van, drove through the front door, loaded up $10,000 worth of goods, backed out into a police car, and then sped off.
Yeah. And I read, what world is it? What world are they living in when they would deny the obvious impact of these things and the story after story after story after story about what's happening with stolen vehicles? And that's why I found it so offensive that Democrats, you know, in trying to keep their 2021 law in place, were saying, well, you know, stolen vehicle is just property. That's just property. It's not worth someone's life if police pursue them. It's like, do you really not hear? They're not just stealing the car to, what, take a joyride. They're using it to commit other violent, dangerous crimes. And so...
untraceable.
It's just wild to me. And you mentioned earlier that these things... And this is why I'm so... There's a lot of reasons. There's been some drama since the last time we had you on. But why I'm so excited about these is these are so common sense. Also just letting voters vote. I don't see anything controversial about that. If it's something I'm going to vote for or against, letting voters vote, that's... the wonderful thing about our democracy. You guys have, and I want you to characterize how accurate you think it is, but you have a way to kind of figure out of the people who have signed the initiatives, how many are Democrats, Republicans, or independent.
Yes.
And the data, so explain how you came to the data, but the data is very interesting.
So we, one, we scan all the, we wanted to make this professional. We wanted to know when we're turning them in, do we have enough valid signatures? Mm-hmm. So we scan all the signatures in, and we then run them against the voter registration database, to make sure that we've got enough signatures that are... We don't have the signature, of course, but we want to make sure at least the voter's registered and the address matches. And then we sort of, on an anonymized basis, we'll run voter signature signer against... a voter model that assigns people a hard Democrat, soft Democrat, independent, soft Republican, mm-hmm. hard Republican. And when we run that, it was really, I didn't know what to expect. I really didn't know what the numbers were, but I had been out collecting signatures actually myself, and I've gone to the fair, and I know that it wasn't a bunch of MAGA Republicans that were just signing these.
Yeah.
We would get all kinds of people that would come in and say, especially the cap and trade, that one, just because they felt it in the tank, right? They felt it in the pocketbook, but a broad spectrum of people. And so as we've done this on the cap and trade in particular, 55% of the people that we can identify correctly, it appear to be Democrats and independents. Hmm. And about 44% roughly are Republicans.
Yeah.
So this is not some MAGA issue from Eastern Washington.
Yeah.
This is a broad spectrum. And I find the number really interesting because if you look at the last couple of governor's elections, Republicans make up about 44% of the population. So the fact that our signing reflects the general population suggests that we've got a fairly broad level of support.
Yeah. Well, and of course, not all of them are. You say MAGA, which is very fancy. MAGA, MEGA, I say MAGA. Maybe you're right. MAGA is much different than MAGA.
The MAGA guy shop at Target.
So. Yes, Target. Well, you know, it's not, of course, all 450,000 or whatever signers of each of these aren't MAGA Republicans, because there aren't that many MAGA Republicans in Washington, despite what Democrats want you to believe.
Yes.
MAGA. We're going to have more with Brian Haywood coming up this week on Sundays with Subscribers. Specifically, we're going to ask him about some of the tactics from the Washington State Democratic Party and the ACLU to harass and intimidate Washingtonians who have been out collecting signatures, signing the referendums, paid signature gatherers, because it is a really serious issue. So we'll have more of that interview with Brian coming up on Sunday's show. If you're not a subscriber already, you can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. MAGA. MAGA. That sounds less intimidating than MAGA. But I think it's interesting that they have ways to kind of figure out, okay, how many Democrats, independents, Republicans are signing these things. There's a good chunk of Democrats signing them. There's a good chunk of independents signing them. So try to paint that as white right-wing extreme initiatives when members of your own party are happily signing them because they know the policies just aren't good for Washington and they're not good for the working class. All right, coming up next in Unbelievable, an update on that insane story of the activist teacher in Seattle who inexplicably still has his job. Well, apparently there's even more dirt on this guy, and now the school's looking into it. We'll get to it in a double dose of Unbelievable. But first, it is going to be a new year soon, 2024. We're getting so old. 2024. Anyway, put that aside. And you'll probably redo your family's budget, take a closer look at finances, especially with, you know, the cost of gas and food and all of that. You got to tighten up a little bit. So if you've been thinking about maybe saving some money with your insurance, check out our friends over at First Mark Insurance. Do the First Mark Challenge like Mike and I did in the spring. You know, I've heard a lot of different stories from people who've done the First Mark Challenge. I've heard from people who are saving $100, maybe even $200 a month, which really adds up in the course of the year. For Mike and I, we got better insurance for the same price, which also was sort of a no-brainer for us. And then I've heard from people who say, hey, I took the First Mark Challenge and First Mark told me that the insurance I had was just fine.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate. And it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't. Okay. No. Yeah, but the service you're going to get is exceptional. And also, they're going to stick with you. You don't pay First Mark for anything. They're going to go out. They're going to do all the hard work, shop the big carriers for you, and find something that fits your needs and your budget. And then they're going to keep that up every year and go back and reassess your plan, reassess the cost to make sure that you have the best possible coverage for the best possible price. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge. They work for you. All right, a Seattle public school teacher who came under immense scrutiny this week for a variety of acts of activism that in any reasonable world would cross the line, is now under increased scrutiny, even more increased scrutiny, because he has a criminal history that we did not know about prior. Let's get to it in our first edition of today's Unbelievable segment. Ian Peter Golosh, the self-described communist history teacher at Seattle's Chief South High School, has a criminal history. Now, before I get to that, I don't even know if we can revisit all the things that this guy has done, but he has this really inappropriate activism streak for a public school teacher going back a long time. In 2020, he was caught on camera harassing news crews, leading students into a government building for a protest, and then encouraging students essentially to harass journalists. I did a story about him at the time. Then he's back in the news this week for, his class he's supposed to teach is ethnic history, ethnic studies, like world history or something. But he's given kids this quiz on, can only women get pregnant? Do only men have pee-pees? And this kid who answered, yes, only women can get pregnant, he failed him on the quiz. So that came out this week. And then he was under even more scrutiny. It turns out he's hanging up pro-Hamas flyers outside and inside his classroom. He took to Facebook and posted that Hamas didn't rape or behead anyone and that Israelis who were murdered were killed by Israelis. He has supported the defund movement and actively affiliates himself with Antifa terrorists. The list goes on. And all of those individual things are enough to say this guy has no place in our public school system. But then, you know, when somebody's under so much scrutiny, inevitably more information is going to come out. So this is from independent journalist Andy Ngo, who he's always, I mean, Andy Ngo literally wrote the book called Unmasked on Antifa. And so he follows Antifa and anarchist sort of groups in Portland and Seattle. Well, it turns out our friend Ian Peter Golosh has a criminal history in Portland, Oregon. He's had multiple arrests, according to Andy Ngo, including for assault and criminal harassment. He ended up being convicted of criminal harassment. If you're watching on the show, a nice little mugshot, though. Seems like it was in his younger years. Ari Hoffman also reported that he's had some arrests in Washington State as well for trespassing and harassment. Those charges were ultimately dismissed. But clearly this speaks activism to me. That's what it sounds like. He runs in, like he says on his social media, Antifa circles. Those sound like charges that are related to criminal civil disobedience, trespassing, harassment, like Andy Ngo said, assault, criminal harassment. Now, apparently, this high school has been inundated with phone calls about this guy. Not a surprise to me. Because as I said on the show earlier this week, can you imagine if you were a Jewish student? Well, that would be so deeply uncomfortable to not only be in his class, but in the same building as the guy. So Ari Hoffman got his hands on an email that was sent out by the principal of Chief Self. It was not to the media, because remember what they told the media in comments. We do not discuss personnel matters. You know, we support our faculty creating a loving environment, whatever it is. But in an email that went out to families of students at this school, Ray Garcia Morales, the principal, said, "Hello, families. I'm communicating with you this evening as I have received several inquiries," I bet you did, "about concerns related to content that may have been covered in one of our classes." So that, I think, has to do with that weird quiz. "Please know that Seattle Public Schools is dedicated to establishing safe and welcoming, inclusive learning environments. We take these inquiries seriously and are looking into this situation. At this time, I'm not able to provide further information, but as this progresses, I will be sure to share details as able. Thank you for bringing forward these concerns." The thing is, though, that before they sent this out, you know, the media was asking about this. And I think it was Jason Rantz who initially broke the story about the quiz, like failing this student for saying, yes, only women can get pregnant and only men have, you know, penises, which is the biologically correct answer. And Jason Rantz, when he reached out to the school defended Ian Golosh for that quiz and won the nature of the quiz, but also, was it even in line with the curriculum of what he should be teaching in a history class? That makes no sense. They defended him. So, and then all this other stuff comes out about, you know, blatant anti-Semitism, denying the atrocities of Hamas, his links with Antifa, criminal history. So now they're going to be like, oh, let's find something that we can get rid of him on. I mean, I don't care. Pick one of the 30 things. Pick any of them. Get rid of him based on that. He doesn't belong around kids. All right, now that I'm properly fired up, Jay Inslee wants another $100 million for a homeless camp removal program that has proven utterly useless. And when a reporter pushed back against his additional ask for spending, Jay Inslee got sassy with him, as he's known to do. Let's get to it in our double dose of unbelievable. So we talked on the show in September about Governor Jay Inslee's failed Rights of Way initiative. So the governor was under a lot of pressure to remove, order to have removed, these homeless encampments that have just been building up along state highways, on state property, because you can have a camp that for all intents and purposes is in a city. Happened in Spokane, happened in Seattle, but the city can't do anything about it. Even if they had the political will, which they did in Spokane, and even Mayor Bruce Harrell, I think, would have done it, they couldn't do anything because the encampments were on state property. You'll remember all the stories about homeless people hurling off items at people on the interstate of I-90 and I-5. I mean, could kill people. And it's Governor Jay Inslee, the Commerce Department, the Department of Transportation, that was that were dragging their feet on this. So he launches this Rights of Way initiative to go in and clear these camps and try to connect the people in these encampments to services. And in total, the investment, when this started for the first year, $143,294. $143,294. Remember in September, we broke the news about the data from the Commerce Department that showed what an utter failure the program had been for that amount of spending. For $143 million, I just want you to wrap your mind around that number, they were only able to get 149 people successfully out of homelessness. They removed about 1,500 people from encampments. Yes, they cleaned up encampments, but only 149 of those people, according to the state's own data, were no longer homeless. So at the time, I broke that down. And I said, okay, let's give people a couple options for what their metric of success is and break it down that way. So, and this is the latest data. So if your metric of success is the state went in and it got someone cleared from a homeless encampment, then and it cost $92,000 per person to clear from a homeless encampment, which I think is absurd. Now, if your metric for success is a person who accepted housing, so they went in there, cleared them out, and they said, yeah, I'll take you up on whatever housing you have to offer. If that's your metric of success, $138,582 per person. And then the real whopper was, and the figure that kind of went viral, is the cost per person for this program to get them out of homelessness. And it's like $1 million. Think about, that's crazy, $1 million. So you'll recall Governor Jay Inslee at the time was like, oh, that's not fair. That interpretation of the data isn't fair because a lot of that $143 million we spent was on buildings and capital. And you can't just divide that up among people who are helping now because, you know, the building might house people for years to come. So Jay Inslee had yesterday a press conference where he's making an ask for another $100 million to put toward this program that's costing the taxpayers of Washington $1 million per homeless person to get them out of homelessness. And he brought up that defense again about, well, don't believe people who are telling you it's costing $1 million because this is being spent on buildings as well.
People look at some of the numbers and they strike you as very large what it takes to reduce homelessness by one. If you do the division, it looks like a long number. But you need to understand when we get that person and we go out and we buy a hotel and we convert it to rooms for the homeless, we own that hotel for the next 60, 70 years. And it's not just that one person we're helping, it's dozens every year because they come in for 30, 60 days and then we get other people in there. And it goes on for years and years and years. So that one expenditure doesn't help one person, it helps hundreds.
Now look, reasonable people can agree with the governor's assessment over my assessment. I totally accept that. That, hey, you shouldn't include capital costs when you're calculating the amount it costs per homeless person to get them out of homelessness. So as we did back in September, I'll do the same thing now. Let's go with Governor Jay Inslee's interpretation of how the data should be broken down. Let's remove the $60 million from the $143 million that was spent and allocated for capital costs. If you do that, even if you do that, the cost per person for exit from homelessness through the governor's right-of-way initiative is still $560,000 per person. So even if you give the governor and this program every benefit of the doubt, it's still costing the government more than $500,000 per person to get them out of homelessness. That's simply not acceptable. So at the governor's press conference yesterday, Chris Daniels with Como News was there, and he asked the governor, you know, based on that data, justify it.
How can you possibly say $100 million is a good investment to continue this program?
Well, for one, it's changing lives. I don't know if you care about these people, but we do. These are somebody's brother, sister. They got a problem. We're helping them solve it. So it's worth saving lives. That's number one. But number two, think about what your house costs. Just think about what you paid for your house. I'll bet you it's over $500,000 if you own a home in King County. I'll bet you it's over $750,000 to buy a house. If you're going to buy a housing unit for people, this is what it costs to buy a place to live in Western Washington. And that's what we're doing. Too many people think, well, geez, how do you come you got to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars just for 30 days rent? That's not what we're doing. We're getting permanent assets that we control and we can help many more people throughout the years to help. So that we're not helping that one person, we're helping maybe hundreds over the next 60 years because we have that asset available to them for a place to live.
Sure. But again, we already sort of discounted that argument entirely, because even if you consider the asset and take that out of the equation, you're still talking about more than $500,000 per person for exit from homelessness. So Chris Daniels did not relent. He went on to tell the governor basically, like, okay, let's just say that you're right and this is just how much money it costs. There have also been complaints, though, about you taking way too long to clear dangerous encampments.
You've heard this criticism in King County in particular that it took somebody to build a hot tub on Myers Way to actually get action. There were shootings and fires near a school, and it took months to get action. There were 14 fires at Dearborn before there was finally action months later. So if you get this new money in this legislative session, how are you actually going to implement it in a manner that's fast, that actually provides results for people immediately?
Well, I'll tell you, we won't if we don't get the money. Okay? We're not going to be able to do it if we don't have the money. We don't have indentured servants to order people to go and pick up trash on the freeway for free. We have not found a great volunteer corps to do that. We have to pay people, and we don't have the money to pay them. Now, that place in Dearborn, if we'd had twice as much money last session in the legislature than we got, we might have been able to do the Dearborn earlier because we'd have enough staff to do it. And I think sometimes people don't understand the incredible work involved. At the one I was at in Marginal Way just last week, they picked up, I think it was 164 tons of trash. It took weeks and weeks and weeks of dozens of people with some like little cats to pick it all up. So the fact is, we need the money to do this work. We are doing it as fast as we humanly can do it. But it's a matter of staffing. And it's a matter of dollars. If we get the dollars, we can do more. If we don't, we can't.
Yeah, you dumb Chris Daniels. How dare you ask a completely reasonable question about why is it taking you guys so long to do this? You know, and Inslee, this is a tactic he's used before, and I'll get to that. But I just have to ask, does it seem like he's particularly sassy toward Chris Daniels?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's about Chris specifically, because this is the pushback, right? And he is being sassy with pushback.
Not used to it. Can you re-rack a couple of those moments?
How can you possibly say $100 million is a good investment to continue this program?
Well, for one, it's changing lives. I don't know if you care about these people, but we do.
If you get this new money in this legislative session, how are you actually going to implement it in a manner that's fast, that actually provides results for people immediately?
Well, I'll tell you, we won't if we don't get the money. Okay? 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 We're not going to be able to do it if we don't have the money.
Okay. Got it, Chris. This is Governor Jay Inslee's tactic. He uses it over and over. I think Nicole's right in that he doesn't like the pushback, right? He's not used to it. I mean, three-term governor, and he's like, how dare you? And the media's gotten so soft for the most part. We used a couple examples earlier in the week when the governor was hit with a hard question. What did he do? He brought little kids up. He brought little children up instead of answer a really legitimate journalistic inquiry about his Climate Commitment Act. He brought up these kids to manipulate people's emotions and put the kids between him and the journalist. And then I'll just play this example again because it really reminds me, because it's on the same issue. Back in September, Jonathan Cho was at one of these dog and phony shows, as I like to call it, that Governor Inslee was at one of these right-of-way encampments, and Jonathan Cho confronted him with the exact data that we just laid out. And again, he dodged the question by essentially suggesting Jonathan Cho doesn't care about people, and he does.
How do you justify that price tag, Governor?
I want to tell you something, that last question. How do I justify the fact that we're making an investment to clean up these encampments? I'll tell you how I justify it. These people are working their fannies off, and they're doing great work, and they got families at home, and every single one of them like to eat, and they like to pay their rent, and we need to pay them, and we don't expect them to do it for free. They're hardworking people.
Yeah, I mean, we don't expect them to do it for free either. However, it should not take in any universe $1 million per person to get them out of homelessness. That is a failure. And anyone, regardless of your political ideology, if you're concerned about the homeless, that should be a failure to you too. Because $1 million, that should help 100,000 people, and it's helping one? What a waste that is. So this is what the governor does. And now we have, what, four examples of it? You ask him a legitimate question that any public servant should be willing to answer, and that is to justify the amount of money you're spending on something. to justify the impact it's having on your constituents. And he turns it back on Chris Daniels. Oh, I care about them. You don't care about them? As a way to try to get him to feel guilty for the question that he's asking. Telling Chris Daniels, well, I guess we won't clean any of this up if people don't give us any more money. Acting like, oh, if I don't get what I want, $100 million of your money to do this, to continue to spend on this wasted program, then we're not going to clean any of the camps up. What a child. What a child. Jonathan Cho in September. We're going to pay these people. We don't expect them to work for free. They're hardworking Washingtonians. On Monday, with little toddlers parading them in front of the media. Oh, you want to ask a question about how my Climate Commitment Act isn't doing what I said it was going to do. I haven't met any of my climate goals, and my Climate Commitment Act and carbon tax are boosting the cost of gas for everyone. You want to ask a question about that? Well, you tell these 4 and 5 and 6 year old kids that. You're ruining their future. It's just like the man is unhinged, so predictable, and he can't be out of office soon enough. Wild. That is his go-to. That is his go-to, to gaslight your emotions and to make you feel guilty. But I'll tell you what, Governor, I don't feel guilty at all. I don't think Chris Daniels does either. All right, I made this the subject of my daily show poll for subscribers on Patreon and Locals. Do you believe lawmakers should approve another $100 million in funding for Governor Jay Inslee's Rights of Way initiative, despite its limited success in moving people out of homelessness? And I think the idea behind this question is, like the governor said, if I don't get it, we're not doing it. So it's like, oh gosh, okay. So should we just suck it up and spend the money because at least the camps are getting cleaned up, even though the people are just moving to a different camp? Or no, do we have to push and fight and make him justify the additional money? It will come as no surprise to my common sense constituency that 97% of people are saying, don't give him the money. Hugh says, did Inslee accompany his plea for more money with an about face on homeless camp cleanups? Did he promise a statewide ban on camping on public places except designated places and parks? Of course not. He's just trying to leverage public revulsion over these encampments into even bigger bucks for the state. Spot on. Kim says, another money grab by King Jay. Danielle says, absolutely not. Zero out of 10 recommend. Jay has a lengthy history of proving he's not capable of doing his job, let alone effectively and responsibly using taxpayer dollars on any of the key problems he has helped to create. Joan says he needs to tell us what percentage has been spent on salaries as opposed to the street people, because I see that's like the most un-PC phrase, or vagabonds. One time, when I was at Cairo Radio, I wrote a headline that was approved and it called them vagabonds. This was like years ago, right? And now I look back and I'm like, I called them vagabonds? I was like, that's not very sensitive.
They're experiencing homelessness.
They are people experiencing homelessness.
Right.
Sorry, I don't remember if I read the rest of your answer. I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing at how funny it is that there's all these like phrases that are deemed not PC anymore that used to be just fine and we can't use.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we'll move on because we're not going to end on time today. I have a commitment that I have to drive to after this and I'm like, we'll do a short show. Never works out for me. All right. What am I going to next? Oh, yes. Okay. Before we get to this week's edition of Florida Report and the latest on the feud between Ron DeSantis and Disney. We've been talking about the environment right now for landlords, particularly small landlords. We've been talking about that with our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Not only is he a real estate agent, but he's also a small landlord, and he has some properties in Seattle and in Tacoma, and he has shared in the suffering of landlords because of those policies. He says, thanks to the strict landlord policies that are already in place in Seattle, there's been a huge decrease in available rental units.
Since 2019, Seattle has lost over 11,000 rental units.
Wow, yeah.
This is important. This is something, you know, like those are less rental units on the market. Majority of those, Brandy, they're not crappy little apartments. Mm-hmm. Those are single family homes. That is the cream of the crop when it comes to, you know, rental inventory. Those are not being sold to other investors. You know, those just, they don't pencil anymore. Somebody's had that for 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and that's going to go to somebody who is going to move, you know, into the city. That is out of the rental pool. That is gone.
Yeah. And that is the opposite of what we're supposed to believe, that we want to do in this state, which is increase the availability of housing options. And so Wes says only time will tell if that's going to be the case in Tacoma as well for small landlords who are trying to look at the new policies down there that are taking effect and decide, is it worth keeping my rental unit here, given some of the horror stories that I've heard? So if this is a subject that you want to learn more about, you know, maybe you're a small landlord and you're thinking, I got to sell, or you just want an expert to run a few questions by, go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and he can commiserate with you about what he's going through as well. But also, if you do choose to sell your units, he can help you out with that. Sellwithwes.com, better way to sell your home. All right, it is Thursday after all. That means it's time to check in on what's happening in a much sunnier place than this. It's our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Hello, Miranda. How are things in Florida today?
Everything's good. It's looking a lot like Seattle outside. We have a lot of rain coming through, so it's very dark and gray today.
Good. Good. You deserve it. No, I'm just kidding. We had crazy rain here for a couple weeks, and then it finally started to clear up. I just thought it was never going to break. It was insane, even for the Seattle area. Okay, let's start with, we know that Florida has taken a much different approach to transgender student athletes than Washington State has, to say the least. They are not allowed. You have to participate in Florida on the team that corresponds to your birth gender. Must.
Correct. Yeah.
For public schools. So there's a volleyball player who did not do that. It's a biological boy that was competing on a girls' volleyball team, and now there have been some consequences.
There have. Not only has this volleyball player been banned from playing on any sports in that school for up to, I think it's like 11 months, they can't represent the school in any extracurricular activities, but the school is also facing a $16,000 fine for allowing this to happen.
Yeah, I'm opposed to punishing the student.
Yeah.
I'm fine with punishing the school because that is the law, right? And I think it's fair. You know, the law protects female athletes who might be on a team in a different high school that is going to be at a disadvantage because another team is playing a biological boy. I mean, yeah. But I don't understand, I guess, the student is playing by rules that the school is letting them get away with. And so I don't believe in punishing kids for things adults let them do.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I feel the same way. I know this is just a really tricky time for transgender students when we try to find where they fit in that sense. I'm not sure how this will all progress, but you know, I remember when we were in high school, there were some football teams in our Minnesota State High School League that allowed girls to play on the football team, biological girls. And that was just because a lot of Minnesota cities are pretty small. And so they can't really make a girls team and a boys team. So I get confused about what the difference is, but when there's laws. And the school should have just asked this student or told the student that they could not participate because of these laws. And yeah. Then the fact that now they can't participate in other extracurricular activities, it kind of sucks because a lot of that helps with college applications and whatnot. And also extracurriculars just keep kids out of trouble. So it kind of sucks for them that they can't participate.
Yeah, there's a lot of complicated stuff. I'm not bothered by girls participating in boys sports. I'm not bothered by it. I think what we're talking about here is a physical advantage that's unfair because you bring up a good point about, yeah, it's not abnormal for girls to participate. And it was kind of like a celebrated thing, right? Where it's like, oh my gosh, there's a girl on the volleyball team or there's a girl on the baseball team or on the football team, but they don't have a physical advantage over men, over boys. So
yeah, that's true.
All right. The latest in the feud between Ron DeSantis and Disney. DeSantis and the state are saying Disney should not be able to sue us for violating their First Amendment rights.
Yeah. And I kind of agree when you get down to the nitty gritty of it all, these laws and stuff that were imposed were for a whole area. They weren't just directed at Disney. So, I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to this whole feud being somewhat over because it is such a waste of all of our time. At the end of the day, I don't really care who wins at this point, but I do think, you know, if reason and logic prevail, then Disney's case against their First Amendment rights violation will just get tossed out.
Yeah, and I think we were both kind of critical about DeSantis going after Disney for what felt like a disagreement about LGBTQ issues. And Disney spoke out about that. And then all of a sudden, DeSantis is like, well, let's dissolve their special status. It did feel like retribution. And so I think Disney is seeing that and saying, the state punished us for giving our opinion on a political issue. And so I can understand it from that First Amendment perspective. I don't know what a judge will decide. But it got complicated because it's like Florida has a right to end this special status that Disney had to sort of operate its own things. I think Florida had a right to do that outside of any controversy that Disney had with, you know, the quote, don't say gay bill or whatever. But it was the timing of everything and kind of the combination of the two things that made it a little shady.
Yeah, the timeline looks like revenge, but, yeah. You know, at the end of the day, you're right. I mean, Disney and its parks are, they take up a massive amount of land, and it was pretty easy for them to get away with kind of governing themselves. And at the end of the day, that just, like you said, Florida had every right to kind of take back control of that situation, but they did perfectly time that with some political stuff. Yeah. So,
and would they have done that if Disney agreed with, you know, them ideologically? I'm not so sure. So I'm not sure I like it all. All right, Miranda, thank you.
You're very welcome. I love your Christmas decorations, by the way.
Thank you, Miranda, for noticing my Christmas decorations. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. I love them. They're very festive. They make me super excited for Christmas.
Oh, love it. All right. Well, we will see you next week. And then you and I will both be going home for Christmas, speaking of.
Yes. I'm so excited for a white Christmas, not palm trees with Christmas lights on them.
Me too.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
No, I did not tell Miranda to compliment my Christmas decorations after scolding you guys for not noticing all my hard work, except you, Matt. Thank you for noticing. Okay, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, and I was just thinking about this earlier, about all the people I've heard from who have had such fantastic results. I mean, every time I get an email from someone, they've lost 30 pounds or more. You know how good that makes me feel? I'm like, oh my gosh, look, I had to gain all that weight and lose it on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan to help all of you do the same thing. It just feels really nice. But you know, I think what works for me on the program is it's not like a weight, it's not like a diet. That's not what I would consider it. It really is a way to cut your excess weight quickly. I mean, I lost most of it in just 2 weeks. And then from there, to have a strategy for the rest of your life to try to change your relationship with food, know what to eat in the right portions, and then also how to enjoy life, how to enjoy your weekends, how to enjoy your holidays without Monday morning rolls around. You're like, well, screwed that up. Now I'm just going to go back to my old ways. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines, no drugs or injections. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. All right, the markets went crazy on Wednesday. I don't know if you saw that, and it came off news that the Fed wasn't going to raise interest rates. So what does that mean? What does it mean for all of us? What does it mean for the economy? We asked Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital to come in. We actually taped with him yesterday right after it happened, so it was fresh in his mind, and to react to not only how the stock market reacted to the Fed, but again, put it into terms that we can understand. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Yeah. So Fed decides to hold interest rates steady. Third time they've done that. Should we read too much into that?
You know, we've been talking about this really over the last month and a half and or last 2 months. And remember when I said about 2 months ago, I was like, everybody hold on to your hats because things are going to get really weird here. Right. We're like, the data is going to get worse and you're going to see the stock market love it. Remember when we had that discussion? Mm-hmm. You saw more of that today, which means the Fed is effectively, well, I think there's two things going on. So the Fed is seeing that economic weakness that we're talking about, which is why all of a sudden, for the first time, the big change today and why you saw the markets respond the way they did was because for the first time, the Fed said no more hikes and we expect to cut next year. Okay. Now, the funny thing about the market's reaction is when you looked at the market pricing, the market had three interest rate cuts priced into it going into today. So then the market rallies even further off the Fed announcing three rate cuts. So it's just the market is just running out of control still. But the reason the Fed started talking rate cuts today was because of the economic weakness. And this is why we were telling you guys, you know, two months ago of, hey, be careful because it's going to get weird. As things get worse, stocks are going to do better. And they're going to do better because everybody is, this is what always happens. For whatever reason, no matter how sure a recession looks, well, Wall Street always says it's not going to happen because it's sort of like it's sort of like Disneyland coming out and saying now's not a good time to visit, right? Don't hold your breath for them to say that. They're never going to say that, right? The Fed has been saying that they're going to play things a certain way. Today they changed course. And I think the only reason that they did that today was because I think they are beginning to try to juice the economy going into the next election,
yeah.
Right? The Fed can say whatever they want. They are an extension of the Biden reelection campaign. They are. You know, everybody's excited. Oh, yeah, the Fed's going to cut rates. It juiced stock market. Stock market was up 1.3% today. The two-year bonds, the two-year government bonds that we own that are paying us 5%, their value went up 2.9% today, right? And this goes to our whole point of saying, hey, guys, you're all in there buying stocks at record valuations going into what looks like a recession, okay? Should be. And I think there's a lot more money to be made owning bonds with zero risk. It is one of the worst risk reward setups I have ever seen in my life, in my career, to go in there and buy stocks at these levels. You know, it's wild times.
So you can check out Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. He does a weekly radio show, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Nuts times that we're living in. But make sure that you are up to speed on everything that's happening with the economy so you can manage your risk. You work hard for retirement. So don't screw it up now because you're not coming to live with me in retirement if you all blow it in the stock market. I digress. Before we get to our closing sanity check, like I said, I got to be out on time today because I have an engagement. However, I do want to read a couple comments. H with a $20 super chat, just because? Wow,
yeah,
just
I guess
because.
So.
Nicole's cat.
Feeling generous.
Nicole's cat, identity unknown. Inslee must be a cat fan as well. The claws are coming out. He's got a good hiss.
So feisty.
He was so sassy.
I feel like that's the new him. He's not running again, so he can just be himself.
Can you imagine if I showed up there? Well, I don't think they'd let me in anymore. But
that's the thing. I think Chris is now on the list that you're on.
Well, I don't think he's Jonathan at Como, though, right? Bryce Anchetta Real Estate says, I still need to sign the Let's Go Wall initiative. Sorry for the delay. Are there any last-minute signature collection sites up this week? Yeah, so just go to letsgowaw.com, letsgowaw.com. You can find a map that has locations and hours where you can go in and sign. Some people are inquiring about, can I still get them mailed to me? The issue is, and ask them, contact letsgowaw.com, but they're hoping that people will turn in signatures by the 18th, and so that leaves you very little time to get them in the mail, sign them, and then get them back. But reach out to Let's Go Walk because it's not our initiative gathering effort, so we're not the appropriate people to ask that question to. Mm-hmm. Let me see here. Let's do a couple more. Ashley King. Haha, OMG. He literally has zero response or plan as to how he would allocate funds and take action to solve the problem. So laughable. And that's the thing. I'd have more respect for him if he's like, okay, our first go around $143 million didn't quite have the desired effect.
Right.
So here's how we're going to tweak things because we need the camps removed from the right-of-ways.
Right.
And that's what he's like forcing our hand because he's like, well, I'm not going to do it then. Like a little, you know, sassy baby. So it's like, okay, so what are you going to do different with $100 million that's going to get better results for less money? But he refuses to do that. He refuses to ever acknowledge any culpability with failure.
Well, I think in that cut, by saying that, he's saying this was the punishment for not giving you money last time.
Right.
So if you want it to be changed, then here, give me money now.
Yeah.
So this was the punishment. And that was a very, they wanted it cleaned up quickly. And he's like, oh, he didn't have enough people because they were doing smaller projects. Like that was an important project. So you pull people off of smaller projects and put them on a big project that need done right away.
Look what our charity of the year, We Heart Seattle, is able to do with volunteers.
Right.
I mean, we went out, we cleaned up this immense, expansive, with some of you, homeless encampment where the trash was like growing into the dirt. And we went a little elbow room, but man, I'd rather give We Heart Seattle the money. Can you imagine what We Heart Seattle would do with $100 million? I promise you, it would not cost $1 million per person to get them out of homelessness.
No.
Insane. All right. We can fit in our closing sanity check really quick. What do you think?
Okay, sure.
Why not? Because it is just a wild one. All right. A transgender volleyball player has been given a volleyball scholarship at the University of Washington. So this is a biological boy who identifies as a girl and is now being given what is a pretty, I mean, they don't have a lot of these to hand out. So it's for women's volleyball at a D1 school, the UW, and they're giving a woman's volleyball scholarship to a biological boy. And look, it's so hard to, I hate these stories because it's like, I never want to, gosh, I don't want to come off as like bigoted ever. And again, I've said this a million times. I want people to be happy and living their own life and liberty and all of that. Like, if it's not impacting me, you do you. I don't care what adults do with their lives. And this is, I guess, an adult, you would assume, or about to be over the age of 18 and go to college, but you're impacting other people. And you're taking that scholarship from a biological woman who can't compete with you because you were just born differently. And I don't see how that's fair. This is from Redux exclusive, and Riley Gaines shared this too. So it's Riley Gaines has been sharing a lot of stories in Washington State. Transgender athlete makes verbal commitment to seize one of just 12 women's volleyball D1 scholarships at the University of Washington. It says, what is their first and last name? Tate Dragaset has long been considered a rising star within women's volleyball, and he was the dominant force on two USA volleyball teams in two separate age groups that both claimed national titles last summer. He was also named an MVP at the Girls Junior National Championships earlier this year. In addition to his club volleyball accolades, he was awarded the title of the California Interscholastic Federation's Division V Player of the Year. But Dragaset's transgender status has reportedly been concealed from public knowledge, with coaches, parents, and opposing players being left uninformed of his biological sex ahead of games. And look, I get that, right? That's not their information to share about someone's health or whatever. But there, I mean, this is an example. Do you think on a boys volleyball, men's volleyball, that they would be the Division V Player of the Year, the MVP at the Girls Junior National Championship, win two national titles? Come on, the answer's no. The answer's no. So we really have to decide, okay, do we care about women in sports or do we not? Or do we just throw the whole thing out, make every sport one gender, and just watch women and their athletic dreams absolutely go down the toilet? Because that's what we're heading toward. And it is really utter insanity to, yes, say, hey, here you got this young person and this is what they're going through in life and we want to make sure that they don't feel excluded. But in doing so, we are excluding other young people as well. How do you balance that? That's really the key. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a I don't know what accent that is. I don't know. Just came out that way. Wow. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Is it Thursday today?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I'll see some of you at the Dispatch event tonight. I hope to see you there. And also, we'll have a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers this week. Please sign up and support the show if you haven't already. We are heading into an important election year, a critical legislative session. We need your support. $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. I'm out of here.